Good afternoon and welcome to the Follow Well Company. This is the Ignite Leadership Series podcast. Our special guest today is Carl Pister. Carl is an executive coach working in the healthcare sector with physicians, nurses, and senior leaders. He's been working as a coach since 1995 and is the president and founder of the Coaching Group Incorporated in Portland, Oregon. So let's welcome to the podcast today, Carl Pister.
Rob, I just appreciate the opportunity to be on the podcast today. Looking forward to chatting with you this morning.
Absolutely, Carl. It's a pleasure to have you on. I gave your introduction and your bio, talked a lot about your career, but I didn't talk at all about your personal side of things. Why don't you share a little bit more? Just give us some insight into who Carl is.
Sure. Thank you. Born and raised in California, then went to school in Utah. Got married to my wife, Audrey, 32 years ago. We've been blessed with four great children. And now as life goes into different stages, two little grandkids. So that's truly the center of a lot. That's a motivation for much of what I do is those marvelous individuals. Our children have married well, and it's nice to have children-in-law that you can welcome with the same intensity that you welcome your own children. So I'm very grateful for that huge blessing. Career-wise, a little of that was in the intro, but it was really two roads diverged in Yellowwood. And one morning, the very same morning, 6 weeks after graduation from college, with master's degrees, I was offered two jobs, one in a residential treatment program for drug and alcohol for adolescents, and the other with a big employee assistance program company out of Salt Lake City. I chose the latter. And that truly, Rob, has made all the difference. It has opened door after door after door as I've worked with just great people throughout my career. What else do I do? I love what I do, so I spend a ton of time reading. I have to admit that even when I go on vacation, my briefcase is filled with books about work and coaching and human development. I love those topics. And I don't think I've read a fiction book recently. Most of them are psychology and work-centered. In my spare time, that which I decide to not be studying and working and writing, since I enjoy those so much, about 20 years ago, I picked up wood carving, and I don't do enough of it to get really good, but I enjoy it a lot. It slows down my hyperactive brain and makes me focus on just one stroke at a time, which is all you can do in carving when you don't use power tools. So it's a good escape. I enjoy it a lot.
Great. Well, you know, they say that when you find your purpose and you're doing the things that you love, that every day is a vacation. So it sounds like you're there.
I truly am. I absolutely, at the end of a very long day, will feel just completely energized.
Awesome.
So that's just been a huge blessing.
Awesome. Well, you've had a very successful career that's extended across a number of fields, executive coaching and counseling, and you've been doing training for over 28 years. What's really brought you the greatest satisfaction and fulfillment over your career?
Great question. I'd say the biggest is seeing sustained change. I work with magnificent people, extremely intelligent physicians, nurses, executives. And when someone pulls me aside and says, you know, this really helped, Carl, I appreciate that. Hearing from their supervisors or C-suite executives that Jane Doe just turned it around and she's kept turning it around, there's just no greater reward than seeing a person's life change whose life was already great. But then by just applying some simple principles consistently, just changes to a whole new level.
Absolutely.
No greater reward than that.
Awesome. Where do you feel that you have excelled in your career or in life in general, and why do you feel that way?
Tough question. Lots of different things, but as I think about the question, Rob, it's got to be, I don't want to say that I'm entirely boring, but I will say that I am consistent and predictable. And that means that my clients know where I'm coming from. They know what they can expect from me. I do huge amounts of study and research so that I'm what I believe cutting edge and what I'm working with my clients on. Most of all, they know I'm going to show up when I say I'm going to show up. I think Woody Allen had the great comment of 80% of success is showing up. And I believe that. I'm on time. I do what I say I'm going to do. Over time, that proves to be a huge step up on the competition.
Carl, I know based on what you've told me and even the things you've said here on the podcast, you're always looking to improve. What are some of those things that you're really focused on and working on in your career or your personal life to really make a leap forward to improve upon?
The singular most important thing I'm looking at right now and really putting some time into is, and it may sound strange, is how I think. That word reactive is a nasty word in my book. Basically, if you look at the genesis of it, it's re-enactive. It's basically to do the same action again and again. And there's some statistic out there that says something like anywhere from 70 to 90% of our daily life is automatic, is autopilot. Mm-hmm. And I found it kind of hit me when I was working with clients that I could get them to change their behavior because it was pretty obvious. It's a physician that's being disruptive. He's acting out angrily in the OR. It doesn't take much for a very smart person to be told, doctor, if you don't stop that, you'll lose your privileges. And so he stops yelling at people for 2 to 3 months, but he hasn't started thinking differently. And as I saw some of my clients backsliding and was puzzled by it, it occurred to me that I haven't helped them at all by just changing behavior. I have to change how they think. And then it hit me, well, Carl, unless you change how you think, you're going to be in the same boat as your clients. And that really opened up a whole new, and what an area to open up. When I think about it, I've been thinking this way. I turned 60 this year. So that's 6 decades of thinking habit, which can be sort of discouraging sometimes. However, what a area of potential is how do I think? And so when I get upset at something, it's okay, Carl, what was your thinking? How can you change that? What was the deep seated experience that caused you to think that way? So it's a fun new area. Wow. And it's truly has no lid on it, because even a well-developed thought can be even more well-developed. It's a bottomless pit of, in a good way,
yes,
of opportunity to change.
Wow, that's very impactful. Very impactful. Well, you know, that really kind of leads into my next question for you, and I can't wait to hear your answer. Looking back, if you had the opportunity to give an advice to a younger Carl Pfister, knowing what you know now and where you are currently, what advice would you give yourself so that you are in a different spot when you get to where you are? Or maybe you're not. Maybe you're right where you are.
Oh, boy, that's a great one. I've given some thought to this one. This has a funny little story behind it. I was in Boy Scouts when I was young and just found what I learned there was superb. My grandfather had started in scouting, I think, the year after Baden-Powell started it. He had his membership cards a stack 70 high. It was, wow. So he had started a leadership camp. And at age 12, he sent me to that leadership camp. And I can turn here in my office and still see the little binders of notes that I took now 48 years ago. After my first week, my counselor, a young man named John Hunt from Missouri, I lost track completely of him, but he had to write an evaluation. And he said of me at age 12, Carl needs to worry less and have more fun. I have always been a hyper-focused, do what you should, do it on time type of individual lifelong. And if I had one thing to tell young Carl Pfister, it was what John Hunt told me, was lighten up, and enjoy life a little more, because I'm a real hard driver. Work first, play second. And I've probably taken that too far.
Going back to your previous comment, old habits and old ways of thinking are very hard to change.
Amen.
Changing behavior is a lot easier than changing your way of thinking. So,
oh yeah, it goes deep.
And it's it's a never-ending process for us, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Well, what leadership principles do you live by that you can share with the podcast audience?
I think my favorite that I tell many people, and it's certainly something as I've worked in companies and coached and consulted, Tom Peters has basically Mr. Peters is credited with probably starting the consulting industry after his book In Search of Excellence came out in 1982. And it's the phrase is this: find great people, hire them, find out what they need, get it for them, get out of their way. I love that phrase because it's never failed me. And what it talks about, Rob, in my view, is humility and servant leadership. Steve Jobs is credited with a comment of, we don't hire smart people and tell them what to do. We hire smart people to have them tell us what to do. And so many times as leaders, we let our egos get in the way where we think we have to be in charge. We have to be telling people what to do. Instead of being servant leaders, stepping back, saying, Jane Doe, you are a rock star. What do you need to blow it out of the park today? And then your job that day as a leader, my job, speak for myself, is to make sure Jane Doe has what she needs. And my job is to clear the path for her instead of putting obstacles in her path. And I see leaders doing this all the time just because they want to get the credit. And as leaders, you can't be worried about credit. You just can't. You've got to put that behind you and realize that the only way you're going to have success is by finding what your people do well and absolutely facilitating that for them. Worries about accountability, because I hear that all the time. We have to hold people accountable. If you've got smart people and you're getting for them what they've told you they need, you will not have problems with accountability. People will self-govern when they know they're supported. I've rarely seen exceptions to that.
I couldn't agree more. That's well said. It's exciting to watch that too. And you can see it as you and I've talked many times. Leadership is a transferable skill. And so whether you're talking about a sports team or you're talking about a business or industry or a law firm or you name it, if you watch that take place and you allow those rock stars to do what they do best and just get out of their way, it is just fun to watch.
It is. And it has an energy all to itself.
Yes.
And so many problems are solved because the best minds are thinking of them.
No question.
Mainly not mine. Like both of us, I know, have affinity to many of what books of John Maxwell. Mm. And just at a conference recently, I love his phrase of some of my best thinking is done by others. But here's one of the best leaders and leadership coaches in the world openly admitting that others have great ideas instead of trying to take credit for himself. It's a great example.
You mentioned credit earlier. You know, when you give credit where credit is due, it ultimately will come back to you. So it's
absolutely
it's not about taking that credit. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, speaking of that, most of us are shaped by and owe a debt of gratitude to maybe just a few key mentors throughout our lives, whether it's that the Boy Scout person or it is someone in your work environment. Do you have mentors like that? And what lessons did you learn from them?
Oh, absolutely. It was early on in my career, my very first job, a marvelous guy. I think he's now retired. I just talked to him about a year ago. Jay Ewell was senior vice president for a division of Aetna Life and Casualty that I worked for. And just monthly bringing me into his office and sharing and giving me a ton of responsibility I was once in a meeting with a chief medical officer of a large firm with whom we had contracted. And if we could have noted everything that had gone wrong, that could go wrong, it had gone wrong with this contract. And I was, of course, in charge of the network for this company. And we were in the conference room, Jay, the chief medical officer, and myself. And he was just literally reaming me out. And this was the first time in my career that I'd really been called on the carpet. And I was just feeling worse and worse with every passing minute. And I saw Jay write something on his tablet, fold it over and push it toward me. And literally, Rob, I thought, okay, looking for a job after this one. And I opened up the paper and on it was written, these are system issues. Don't worry. I still have that paper. I have a folder in my office. It's my leadership folder where I put things that impacted me. I still have that paper because he could have easily jumped on the bandwagon and thrown me under the bus, but he didn't. And he helped me to know, yes, we're in a serious situation, but Carl, don't personalize it. It's beyond you. And basically, Carl, I have your back. And that, obviously, Rob, that was, 1986, so 32 years ago, still stays with me.
You know, I know most of us have mentors. I really and truly feel sorry for those people who have not had those opportunities to be mentored by someone throughout their life or their career. And most of us are or have been in some way, shape, or form. So
I don't see how we can learn. I don't see how we can grow unless we do. One of my favorite topics is, it seems to be a tangent, but over in Europe where they have the guild system of passing along artisan and craftsman abilities. Mm-hmm. And you're an apprentice until a master craftsman or mentor says, Rob, you have the skills to be a journeyman. And then a journeyman, we now use it in the union ranks, but a journeyman literally meant going from place to place, from mentor to mentor, getting the skills that would allow you to then be considered within your guild of being a master craftsman. So I just love that. And sadly, Rob, I think we've lost that.
I agree.
Where can we get that? I know in my wood carving, I subscribe to a blog, not a blog, but a webinar on a regular basis where I can watch one of the best carvers in the world do his craft because there's no other way to learn it. In my view, I'm a visual learner. So I completely subscribe to what you're saying, that without a mentor, I don't know how to grow.
Well, you know, Carl, you've got some great blogs and articles out there. That might be another article for you.
That's a good idea.
How do we that for ourselves is to create that. Yeah.
Well, that's a great point.
If you had to pick one word, and I love asking this question, I ask it to most of our guests. If you had to pick one word that describes you or what you aspire to be, what would that one word be?
Integrity.
That's a good one.
And why integrity? Because everything else rides on that. I can't remember. I think it was Boston Consulting Group did a huge study. They're just such an amazing company because they not only, you know, are worth the money people pay them, but they do this research and they came back with what is the number one trait that people look for in their leaders. And it's being truthful because everything else is compromised if that doesn't exist.
Yes.
And everything else progresses if that is in place. Even tough messages can be made more tenable if trust involved. I have seen, as you probably have, Rob, you've been, you know, CEO of hospitals. When the subject of trust thrusts its head into a negotiation, you're no longer negotiating what you need to negotiate. You're negotiating around this ghost in the room of poor trust.
Yeah, yeah.
And nothing, in my view, and it's so sad because you just can't go into a room and say, okay, so we're going to trust each other now. Just doesn't work that way. What's a comment? And you may know the phrase better than I do. It takes years to build trust and a second to destroy it.
So, right. And, you know, I've learned this lesson the hard way for myself is lead at the speed of trust. If you ever get out in front of that, you're done. You don't have a chance to recoup from that or recover.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Are there some favorite books that you've read? And what makes those your favorite books?
Wow.
Let's throw quotes in there too, because I usually ask both.
Sure. I'll go first of all. Rob, you and I have talked. We're both people of faith. My seminal verse from Scripture is, "My peace I give unto you, my peace I leave with you. Not as the world giveth, give I unto you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid." And, you know, not to turn your podcast into a Sunday school lesson here, but that's a focal point for me. Because when I get a little sideways, I've got to realize, okay, there's something bigger than Carl out there. There's something bigger. I have a nasty meeting coming up on Wednesday this week. And, you know, it's causing it not to lose a lot of sleep, but wake up, think about it. And I just have to step back and say, okay, there's bigger things out there. The meeting's important. Got to pay attention to it. Got to do my homework. And there's bigger things out there. So I would definitely say that that's a seminal verse for me. Into a more secular setting, it comes from the psychologist Carl Jung, and I don't know if I pronounced that right. And I'm paraphrasing this, but I love the quote, "Until we make the unconscious conscious, it will determine our path and we will call it fate." When you think about that, it's pretty deep.
Yeah.
Because we have this deep hard drive that's running us all the time. And unless we're conscious of where that hard drive comes from, and I hear it, I'm talking to a guy this afternoon, and his favorite phrase is, "Well, that's just the way I am." Well, obviously the coaching hasn't progressed far enough for deeper insight, and hopefully we'll get there. But that's basically saying my deep programming is causing me to act this way. And frankly, I don't have the guts to change it, or I don't have the insight to change it. So those are my two quotes that I bring. I read tons of books, and my clients are always giving me a bad time because my favorite book is the most recent one I've read, I guess. The Bible that I use for coaching, though, is Marshall Goldsmith's book, "What Got You Here Won't Get You There." That has awakened so many of my clients to behaviors that they do to get to a certain point in their career. But if they keep doing those past a certain point where it got them to a point, now it'll start actually tearing them down. So I would say that would be one of my best suggestions. Anything coming out of the Harvard Project on Negotiation by Roger Fisher. I just finished a book by one of his proteges, Negotiating the Non-Negotiable by Daniel Shapiro. All of Fisher's books, Beyond Reason, Getting to Yes, Getting Together, Getting Past No. Just basic books. I think Getting to Yes is still on the Wall Street Journal bestseller list. And the author, Dr. Fisher, passed away like 5 years ago. The book is still there. Like Steve Covey's Seven Habits book is still on the list. I really believe in the phrase that if you're not leading, you can't be, if you're not learning, you can't be leading.
I agree.
It always worries me when someone says, "Yeah, Carl, I'm really not into books. I just don't have time to read." And I'm thinking, then what are you doing leading people? You don't have time to read. You don't have time to sharpen your saw, as Covey put it in his seventh principle. And yet you're pretending to lead. What are you leading with? Your tank's going empty.
Yeah, you better have another way to be fed for that if it's not books.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You talked about Marshall Goldsmith. I love when he talks about superstition and that, you know, as leaders we think that the things that have gotten us where we are today are must, and the results that we've achieved are coming from those, which is the definition of a superstition. And so oftentimes that's the very thing that keeps us from growing and changing, is that we tie those two together, our results to a particular behavior when they may have nothing to do with it. In fact, it could be hindering us. So
that is a hugely important point. Unless we really force ourselves to step back and really look at cause and effect, we can go down some really erroneous paths.
Yes, we can. You know, I know that you coach a number of healthcare executives and physicians. Healthcare, as you know, is changing rapidly. What do you imagine, based on the things that you see and you hear, what do you imagine healthcare is going to look like in 10 years? Or what impact has that or this changing environment had on your clients? And what advice are you giving them, can you give them, in coping with this change, this rapid change, and leading through this change? I know that was a lot in one sentence there, but I'm interested to see from you, I know you're not directly in healthcare, but you are involved. And so how are you coaching and what do you see?
Well, obviously, as we've talked, I think we met earlier this year at Becker's Healthcare Conference, which I think is one of the leading think tank weeks of getting great minds together about this topic. And this consensus I came away from that conference was no one really knows where it's going to be in 10 years. I listened to the CEOs of some of the largest healthcare organizations nationwide, and they're scrambling to stay ahead of the game. However, I think the basic principles work of healthcare has got to really adopt the focus of listening to their customers. And there still is the Marcus Welby syndrome out there of ultimately the doctor knows best. And certainly when someone goes under the scalpel, at that point, the doctor does know best. However, we have to get away from the hierarchical environment of medicine. I see that happening in the new physicians coming in. However, the environments they step into, Rob, many times destroy the non-hierarchical approach that the newer physicians take. So I think senior executives within healthcare need to be very focused on maintaining an environment that allows some of the great ideas coming from other industries to be used. Healthcare is not an early adopter of many things.
It certainly is not.
And there's so much learning we could take from others, but we don't, because we have the view of we've always done it this way. And because we're the highly educated doctors and nurses and experienced C-suite administrators, that we know better. And I'm speaking as if I were one of them, and I may need to emphasize I'm not a physician or not a nurse. However, that level of thinking of we know it because we're so smart has got to leave. And that's still deeply held in too many meetings that I'm in.
Do you think some of these disruptors that are out there now, some of the true change agents, do you think they're going to have a major impact on the healthcare system as we've known it up until this point?
I do. It's going to have to. There's too much. Somewhere there's going to be a pushback by the people who are tired of I think healthcare now takes up 20% of our gross domestic product. I may be off on that figure, but it's astronomical.
Yeah.
And why is it that some insurers are now finding it cheaper to allow their clients to go to a foreign country where they have great healthcare? Because it's cheaper to fly a patient business class to another country to get a surgery and have them stay in state-of-the-art facilities treated by British-trained doctors. We can't ignore that.
No.
It's out there. It's being done. So either they've got to disrupt and say, we are going to radically change, or the trend and the thrust of we're tired of how it's being delivered is going to hit, and then it's going to be beyond their control.
I agree. Well, as we close, Carl, and I appreciate all of your time today and your great comments. Tell us, what do you see as the next chapter of your life?
Next chapter, people have asked, gee, Carl, you're coming on 60 here. When are you going to retire? And I don't think I'm going to. It's been so exciting over the last 10 years to be part of the healthcare environment and working. To stop doing this now, I just don't see any rationale behind it. So certainly travel will be more around family, and coaching will be more focused on clients that I choose. But overall, Rob, I don't see a lot of change. I see still the same learning, going to different conferences, interacting with great people. And the nice thing about the job of a coach is, as long as the mind and the body stay sharp, we only get better, because experience and wisdom are gained with age and they don't dissipate. So I'm looking forward to the next chapter.
Awesome. Awesome. You know, I often talk about that reflection, and John Maxwell does too. Just because we get older, if we don't take the time to reflect on the things that we've done well and the things that we didn't do so well, and what caused that, and how do we improve upon that? And I do think that's, if we can do that, that wisdom that comes with age is then exponential wisdom. So I'm looking forward to continue to be close to you and be your friend and watch and see you grow. And these next few years for healthcare, I think, are going to be fun to watch and fun to be a part of.
Yeah, absolutely. And who would want to be on the sidelines? Yeah,
I totally agree.
This is some people think I have a strange idea of fun, but I can't think of anything more fun than being right in the mix with the decision makers that are asking the Robs and Carls of the world to be part of their lives and careers while they do it.
Yes, sir.
What could be better than that?
Well, listen, any closing thoughts or leadership lessons that you want to share with the podcast audience that we haven't already touched on?
I would really, Rob, just go back to that great principle by Tom Peters that underlines servant leadership and humility. Find your great people, find out what they need, make it a point to get it for them, and make it a point to get out of their way. When credit is due, pass it along. Get yourself out of the spotlight, push others into the spotlight, and that's where leadership is fun, because you see people develop and thrive, and it gets back to a point you made. It always comes back around. If you need that, if you're into that, you're worried that you're not going to get credit, if you pull yourself out of the spotlight, and just like you said, Rob, you'll see it come back on you.
Yeah.
Because people that are appreciated and developed come back and say thank you. And that's where the reward is seeing someone that maybe you didn't even think you affected, shooting you an email or getting you on the phone and saying, Rob, I don't know if you remember me, but it just is a magnificent feeling.
Yeah, that is.
And I think that's what leadership is all about.
I agree. Well, Carl, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast today.
Oh, thanks for having me. I love the questions, love the conversation. I enjoy working with you, Rob.
I look forward to many more years of similar conversations and ways that we can really come together and collaborate to add value to lots and lots of people along the way.
I would agree. Thank you very much.
Well, for Rob Folliwell, the Folliwell Company, and the Ignite Leadership Series, we say thank you, Carl, for being on the program, and make it a great day.